So today's the 20th of February 2012. My name is Therese Sweeney. This is the Pioneers of the Fringe project. I'm interviewing Tony Perich today.
So what's your full name?
Anthony Mark Perich, and born in Crown Street, Sydney, and lived at Rossmore when we were born.
What year were you born, Tony?
13th of November, 1940.
What were some of your first memories as a child?
Oh, that's a hard question. Going back of remembering what my father told me, we used to live in a tin shed and at Rossmore, and that's how we started. I can't remember much else except I remember going to school at Rossmore and I couldn't speak a word of English. So I was 6 years old, and I had to start from the ABCs to start learning English. So I remember that.
How did that feel?
Well, I didn't know any difference, so I just got on with it and listened.
So you're a good listener.
And that day I was a good listener. I'm not as good a listener today as I was then.
So you're in the kindergarten. You're in a school shed, or
no? It was a little school at Rossmore, still there. Little school. There was one classroom, and everyone was in there. I think there's around about 30 children, and we all learned together.
Do you remember some of your little friends back then?
No, I don't actually. Don't remember any of them.
Okay. Now your father's full name and his date of birth.
I don't know exact date of birth. I know it's Liboria Colombo Perich, and he arrived here in 1938. Exact date, I don't know. I should know, but I can't remember.
Do you know what year he was born?
No, I don't.
What about your mum? What was her full name?
And Julia Perich.
Do you know what year she was born?
No.
I'm
sure you can find that. We can find that out.
That's no problem.
Yeah.
So were they born in the same town or?
No, they weren't born in the same town. They met on a boat coming across from Croatia.
So they met migrating?
Yes, they met migrating. Exactly, went on the boat.
So what was the story of that, that they told you? You know how they say, oh, we met on the boat and what?
Well, they met in a boat, and my father actually was sponsored by someone in Young, and went and worked on a cherry orchard out of Young, the Koenig family. And I remember him telling me that he didn't get much money, but he would get 2 shillings if he would go out and kill a sheep and dress it and bring it in for the workers to eat. So he would do that every afternoon just to make a little bit more money.
He was thinking back then.
Yes, he was. He was always one to get ahead.
Tell me about your father. What did he do in Croatia? What did he...
He actually worked on around the vineyards, around fig trees and olive trees and that type of thing, and fishing. He was doing fishing too.
And your mother?
I don't know what she did over there, but I know she lived in a little place. I can't even remember what the name of the place was, actually. I went there only once, so I don't know.
Do you remember what boat they came out on?
No, I don't. I don't even know it.
About the journey? Do you recall any bits they told you about the journey?
No, I don't, actually.
Did they know anyone on the boat aside from each other?
No, I don't think they did.
Okay, so they arrived where?
In Sydney. And I don't know how they actually met back together, but I know my father had to work out there to pay his airfare. And when he did that, he'd come back to Cabramatta. And that's where he started to work around market gardening.
Okay, so he's gone to Young first off.
Yes.
He gets money and he goes to Cabramatta.
Yes. And that's where he met my mum again. They got together then and must have kept in touch. And they never actually told me the real story.
Do you know what families that were at Cabramatta at that time?
Yeah, there was the Begoviches. That was my mother's brother was there. He come out with my mother's brother. And there was the Sitaras there. And that's about all I can remember there. Yeah.
Okay, so they married. He came out here in 38?
Yes.
you were born in 1940.
That's right, yeah.
So you were brought up in Cabramatta initially?
I don't know. Okay. No. Now, at that time, we had a place, my father bought a little place at Rossmore. So I was actually born at Rossmore.
Tell me, do you know much about what he was doing at Cabramatta? Obviously saving a lot of money, but was he helping on farms?
I think he was doing a bit of carrying with a truck.
Okay.
And I got a photo of his actually truck, first truck.
What sort of truck was that?
It was a Federal. Remember that. So I got that photo.
Can you say more about that truck?
Well, I didn't really know a lot about it because it was, you know, we were very young at that stage. Our first truck that I drove was an Austin, and we still got that. We've just restored it. You've probably seen that, have you?
Not personally, but I've heard about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we just restored it. So it was very good.
Okay, so I'm just going to sidetrack a bit. Tell me about what I'm thinking of it, because the Colombo Cup at the Bocce Club. Why is that the Colombo Cup?
Well, it was actually a charity day by Kids of MacArthur, and they wanted to raise some money, and they asked me would I sponsor my father and a cup. So I said yes. Well, we do a lot of charity work, as you can see by a wall. That's only half of it. We believe in charity. My father taught me that many, many years ago, that we've done very well in this country. It's time for us to start giving back, and we've been doing that ever since. And this is one of the sponsorships. Well, we sponsored Kids of MacArthur Bowling Club to make some money, and because he was one of the original people at the Leppington Bowling Club, they named it after him, and so we sponsored it.
Have you ever won that cup?
Yes, I have, actually.
How many times?
I think it was twice.
You know.
I think it was twice.
You'd probably be definite on that one, would you?
No, I'm not definite, but I think it was twice. No, I don't know. I think I won the first time, I won the last time we played. So it was very good. I was very proud of that. It was a team. I wasn't on my own. It was a team effort. It was four people. So we all played as a good team.
That's the way, isn't it? Do you remember some of those team members?
No.
Okay, so we're at Rossmore. We're going back to Rossmore.
Yes.
So describe the dwelling.
Where we lived, I actually can't remember that part, but all I know it was a tin, rusty old tin shed. And then after that, we eventually, my father bought across the road, and he built a nice little house. It's still standing there, the house.
What address
that was that? That was at the corner of 4th Avenue and Bringelly Road, on both sides of the road.
Was it a brick house?
Brick and fibro.
And
weatherboard and fibro, sorry, weatherboard and fibro.
And
yeah.
He built that house?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
When did he learn those skills to build?
I actually don't know. I don't know that.
So what was he doing on the land there?
He was growing tomatoes. He was growing tomatoes. That's what he wanted to do. He grew always tomatoes and cabbages and peas and beans, and he used to take them to the market.
He'd sell them himself.
You sell them himself, yeah.
So that was a business decision. It's a lot
Imagine what it was. It was a lot of work. My mother was a workaholic too, so they actually both worked very hard together, and that's what started our family off.
Tell me about the sort of person you remember your father to be. Like, what were some of his qualities?
I think his biggest quality was hardworking and generous to people. He was generous to us. He made us work hard, but that was a good thing because he learnt us the skills of what we needed to do to succeed.
Did you ever go on a holiday as children?
No, we never went on holidays. We used to sometimes go to Uncle had a restaurant in Bathurst. We used to go up there for a weekend just to see him. And we used to get some free lollies and some free chips, and that was we thought it was great to go up there for the weekend. It was a long way, because we used to remember going along the northern road here, it was dirt. And driving up there, it was a long way, it took a long time, because the roads were very bad.
So what was your uncle's name?
Jack.
Jack Perich.
Jack Perich, yeah.
And he ran a fish and chip shop.
restaurant, fish and chips restaurant takeaway shop in the middle of Bathurst. Called the Rose Restaurant. I still remember the name.
Did he migrate out here around the same time as your father?
No, he came out much, much earlier.
How early would he have been?
Well, I think he was here about 7 or 8 years before my father came.
And he went to Bathurst, which was unusual a bit.
Now, I don't know where he went, but that's where I remember him from, Bathurst.
What about the extended family? Because I've interviewed Mary Parrish before.
Yes. Oh, you don't need that, do you?
I was going to say turn that off, but I didn't even see it. So Mary Parrish, was she married your father's cousin?
Yes. I didn't have a lot to do with them, so I really don't know a lot about that family, you know?
What was his name? Do you know?
No, I don't. No.
Okay. So what was the landscape like at Rossmore as a young boy? You in your house? How did it all look around you?
Well, it was small. It was very small, but I remember there was a lot of trees in the place, and my father used to pull them down with an old stump puller and chop the roots out. Very used to take him days to get one tree out so he can plant his tomatoes. So it was a very slow process, you know. It was a lot of hard work.
And when did you start working on the farm?
We then moved a few times from Rossmore down towards Leppington, then to another farm at corner of Cowpasture Road and Bringelly Road, and we were market gardening there. I didn't really like market gardening because we used to come back home from school. We used to work all the time in the garden, and it was very hard to study. So when we kind of decided this wasn't for us, and my father then said, well, we might as well go dairy farming, and he started with milking 14 cows.
Okay, so I have an idea that he learnt dairy farming from a farmer in Green Valley.
He did, a bloke called Alf Cooper, who taught him everything. He used to go to the markets with him, tell him what cow to buy, and I remember that vividly.
Tell me more about that, because that's a very important transition in your father's learning.
It was. It was something he didn't know nothing of. And the first cows he bought, he went down to Wollongong and bought 14 Illawarras. From there and bought them up, and Alf Cooper went with him. Then Alf Cooper would slowly go to the markets at Camden when they sell the cows, and we'd tell him to buy that cow, tell him to buy that cow. And over a few years, he learned what was the cow, which is the best cow, and that type of thing. And that's how he learned it, from a very wise man.
Alf Cooper, what do you know about him?
Well, Alf was a single person, never got married, and a very generous person. He was a great believer in helping kids. And he used to bring in a lot of kids, teach them about farming, people, underprivileged kids. He was a great man and a great person that would want to help people.
And where was his farm based?
His farm base was on Green Valley Road. Had a dairy up on a hill. There's all houses there now, alongside a bloke called Hughes.
Now, was that the one that ran down Banks Road? There was a dairy farm. Like when the housing estate opened,
yes,
the edge was Banks Road.
So you go from Moxtop Park Road and you go up a hill. I don't know what that road was. I think they used to call it Green Valley Road, didn't it, come down there? And then they changed the name, didn't they? I think so, yeah.
Okay, so what else do you remember about some of those farmers? Do you want to just, Green Valley?
Well, my wife's parents had a pig farm next to Alf Cooper. So that's where I met my wife there, and so it was my brother took me home. I kind of knew the family, and her brother used to help me out on working, and he took me home one day and introduced me to his sister, and that's how it started. But they were very good friends, Alf Cooper, and they were neighbours.
So what's your wife's former name?
A Knox.
How big was the piggery?
I was probably around about 200 pigs. Which in them days was very big.
How much land would that have been on?
I think it was about 120 acres.
So what happened with the piggery?
Well, when the housing commission bought that land, and so they sold that out and moved to Maitland and bought a dairy farm.
Do you remember an any of the other farmers that were farming?
Yeah, there was Johnson's. They moved out of there when the housing come, and they moved to Bringelly, a place we call Greenways now, because we bought that off them later too.
So the Johnsons, what were they farming before they sold?
They were dairy farming. Yeah, they had a lot of land there.
So Green Valley, because they're named, I grew up in Guernsey Street, Busby. Yes. So they named a lot of the streets after cows in Busby.
Yes, because it was all dairy farm country. And there was another dairy farmer there, and I can't actually think of his name, but it was another. There was two dairy farms and a piggery along there.
So when did you first meet your wife? How old were you?
I was 18.
So where were you schooled in your later years?
I went to Liverpool Boys High School.
For the duration?
I went to Rossmore, then I went to Raby, called Leppington now. And then went to Liverpool Boys High School and left that to come home to work.
So dairying was, you were, had a dairy farm at Cobbity, did you?
Yeah, that would come very later. We started the dairy farm at Leppington. And then because we needed more land, we bought a little farm at Cobbity and we dairied there too.
So your father was accumulating land.
Yes, he was.
How did that start? Like, what was
the drive was he wanted to have land because we needed a lot more land for cows. And where we were wasn't big enough. We had to have somewhere where we could run the dry cows. And we bought the farm that the Lawn Cemetery is on now. That was our farm. And then we sold to the Lawn Cemetery people. And then we had another farm on Cowpasture Road, which was now called Greenway Estate. So there's housing on that now too, and we sold that to the housing department.
So when you first started dairying, so these properties, did you have a number of it was one property?
One dairy, but the other farms were used to run dry cows.
Okay. So what sort of type of dairying? What sort of dairy was it? Was it a walk-through or?
Nah, just a walk-through. Yeah, very simple, very cheap to build to start off with. It was very simple.
And who did you sell the milk to? Were you milking for?
We sell the milk to dairy farmers. And because there were quota systems in that day, we actually had to have a quota to sell milk, and we would go around buying all the quotas around the area to try and build our quotas up.
Can you describe that system?
The system was a very complex system. We were buying a lot of quotas out from people. The government, to be sure, we were getting too big and try to stop that. So they made us then, you couldn't just buy a quota, you had to buy the farm and everything. Before that, we just buy the quota and the cows. And they stopped that. You'd have to buy the farm, keep it for 5 years, to keep the community quota. And we kept doing that, and after 5 years, we'd sell the property back off again.
What department was running that system?
We called that the milk board at that time.
What did you feel about that system?
Oh, I thought it was disgraceful. You know, I mean, it's very sad when people won't let you expand, and that's what it was. The government didn't want you to expand. I don't know what they were frightened of. But we want to milk a lot of cows, and we're milking 2,000 now, or just over 2,000, and they were trying to hold us back, and we weren't happy.
How much milk were you producing daily back then, and what sort of money are you talking about for?
Well, it varies how it produced, because when we started milking 14 cows, naturally it wasn't a lot of milk. You know, we just put in the cans, and then we got bigger. And we were, at one stage, we were producing 50 milk cans. That's 10 gallons in them days in each milk can between Leppington and the Cobbity Farm. And we used to load the milk on the trucks and take it into Camden at the milk depot there.
So that was part of Camden Park there?
Yes, no, that was right in the middle of next to the sale yards there. And the train used to come there and pick up the milk.
And how much were you getting?
That's a long time ago. I don't know, but it wasn't much in them days. I don't know what it was. I can't remember that. No.
Did you do anything else with, like, butter or cream?
No. Just was all straight milk.
So tell me about the truck. You you and your brother would who'd take the milk in? How did that work?
We just we used to have a person pick the milk up. He used to come around every morning, pick up the milk. And the Cobbity Farm, we bought a little truck in Old Bedford, and we used to drive that into Camden every day because there was no one there to pick it up.
Now, dairying's early hours, long hours.
Well, yes, it was. We used to start at 4:30 in the morning, but it wasn't really that bad because you got used to it, and I still get up early now because I got used to getting up early, so it's not so bad. You know, you get used to it. 7 days a week was a bit hard, especially when you want to go out and take a girlfriend out, and you'd go out at night. You'd have to be home by 10 o'clock because you had to start again at 4:30 in the morning. So that was a bit hard, and it wasn't many holidays. We would get 10 days a year off when we started to get a holiday, and that was real hard.
So let's just talk about what was really hard for you during those times, because some of the challenges that?
I think the challenge was that we were actually growing very fast, and we never had any money because everything we had we put back in the farm, and my father used to give me 10 shillings a week, and I used to have to take my girlfriend, as the saying goes, and we used to go to Sydney Speedway, and that would cost 10 shillings to get in, 5 shillings each. So we couldn't buy any hamburger and chips, but she was working at Anthony Horton's, so she had more money than I did. So she would buy the hamburger and a Coke, and we'd sit there at the Liverpool Sydney Speedway, Mount Druitt, and we'd go sometimes to drive-in too. We even went to the drive-in in an old truck because I had nothing else.
Well, that sounds a bit tough.
Yes, it was tough, but it was what you had to do. I never complained. Because this is what you had to do, and I think I've been brought up to appreciate what we had to go through.
So, just trying to think where to go from here. So your father started selling land back to the back, subdividing land?
No, when the quota was finished, 5 years up, we just sell the land as it was. And if we could get our money back, we were happy. If we didn't, well, that's so be it, you know. We'd always sell our land, try and just get our money back.
I remember I've just edited Con Contista's story, and he said that he bought some land from Colombo in 1947.
Yes, he did. That's where we used to live, on the corner of Rickard Road and Brangelli Road. We were there. We had an old fibrow house we were living in. It was all right, you know. It was nothing fancy. But it was good. It was a bigger farm. It's actually right now where the bowling club is. The Leppinda Bowling Club is on part of that land that we owned.
Okay, the bocce club
there. Yes.
Okay. So, you wouldn't have had time for any sport or anything when you were younger?
No, never had any time for sport. I didn't have time for sport at school. Only when we used to have in the school, because when we come home, we'd have to go out in the paddock and work.
Was that lonely?
No. Yeah, it's probably when you come to think of, you didn't have a lot of friends in the sense, but my brother and me had each other, and we had some friends of our fathers, like the Sitaras, the Banoviches and all that, so we got on all right, you know, so it was good.
So describe your relationship with your brother. What does he mean to you?
Oh, I think if we could look at it today, you know, I just had my 51st anniversary. He's been with me all the time. When I got married, he lived with us. So it was part of our family, and we get on famously together, and that's why we're still together and work together. That's been our success of our family.
What's the age difference?
2 years. It's not a lot, just 2 years. So, you know, we were pretty close together. You know, we used to have some neighbours, the Hennessys, they were neighbours down the road. Their father used to work in a water board on the corner there, and so we used to come up there, and to Bones, we used to come up there, and so we used to have a few friends that were neighbours, we used to get together. So it was not too bad, you know, it was good, you know. But as school friends, well, we never had any, because there was no such thing as having a party and bringing your school friends to a party. That didn't happen, you know.
So did you feel alienated from the city? Was it really country here?
Here today?
not today, but back then.
Back then, yeah. I mean, if you told anyone where you live, I mean, where's that? You know, it was a long way out. No one knew where that was. It was all bush out here. So it was pretty way out, but I didn't feel that. You know, I loved the area. You know, I remember going to school at Raby, and we never wore shoes, you know, bare feet, and we used to get the stick around our legs or over the knuckles because we misbehaved, and every kid misbehaved. We respected that, and I don't regret it one bit.
What about your mother's cooking? Was she a traditional cook?
She was an unbelievable cook. She was, my wife learned a lot from my mother, cooking spaghetti, pancakes, fritillas. I mean, she was one of the best to do that, and she was an extremely good cook, extremely good cook.
Did you have fire stoves? Or
yeah, we had a wood-fired stove. You know, we used to have to chop the wood, and every Sunday we would have chicken. That was the only time we'd have chicken. I'd have to go out and help Mum chop the head off the rooster and come in there, put in a boiling water and pluck the feathers out and help Mum do that. That was all right. It was nothing like that. I'd learnt that and it was good. And we would always have ice cream on Sunday. So it was really well worth helping clean the chook.
So the ice cream, was that bought at the supermarket?
That was bought at the supermarkets. In them days, I can still remember we had coupons and I'd have to ride a bike to the shop to get sugar, tea, all different things like that, you know, and I'd have to give coupons to get the things for the house. And it was one of them hard times, and I don't regret any of it because I think that's life. You get on with it. You know, people whinge today, they haven't got this and they haven't got that. You know, this is what life is, you just get on with it.
It seems to be a theme in the Croatian community. You just get on with it.
That's
I actually really like it. It's really helped me.
You know what it is, you don't... everyone complains about this and complains about that, and I can complain about a lot of things politically, but get on with it, accept it, and I think our dollar's too high, but that's what it is, and just work around it and make it work, because the dollar being where it is very, very hard for the farmers today.
So, taking you back to your bike, and where was the shop you'd have to ride to?
We would have to go to Austral or Leppington.
So describe the journey.
Well, it wasn't that, you know, we used to push the bike. I remember coming home once and I had a parcel on the front bump bar handles, and it fell down and got in the spoke and I tipped over there, and then I ended up coming home with a big gash in my head, and my mother went crook at me, you know, and I thought I was going to get sympathy, but she belted me over the bum. So what the heck did you do that for, you know? That's fine, you know, it's one of them things, I shouldn't have done it. So I never did it again, because I was going, if I did that, I was going to get a smack when I got home.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, it wasn't a problem, you know. I mean, that's what life is about, you know. I mean, I remember once Mum was going crook and we were cranky, so she's chasing with a broom. I grabbed the broom and threw her on the roof. And she said, oh, that's fine. Wait till your father comes out. Well, my father came home, boy, did I get in trouble. You know, them days was pull your pants down and whack over the bum with the stick. Not a big deal. I think I'm better for it.
I remember those days.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially after church.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay.
But my brothers had football pads.
Yeah, that's better. I didn't have nothing. Bare bum. Pull your pants down. And if you cry too much, you get more.
Okay. So you were always going to work on the farm. That was just always...
No, I wasn't going to always work on the farm. I wanted to be... I didn't want to come on the farm. But I was going to school. I was because I didn't wasn't very good at English. I only passed once in English, and that was in intermediate, and I got 54. And I thought this is good. At least I passed. Well, I never passed anymore. And the headmaster took me into the half year, and he said, you have to go home and not speak English. As Croatian, you've got to speak English so you can learn better English so you can learn. And I said, well, I'm not interested. I'm no good. Halfway through, I come home. I got a bus, I come home. And my father said, what are you doing at home? He said, I quit school. And he said, you know what you've got to do now? I said, yeah. Roll up my sleeves and work. And that's what I did. That's how I come back to the farm. So I wasn't capable of doing anything else because you couldn't matriculate unless you passed in English.
Must have been such a disadvantage for people that came from non-English speaking backgrounds.
It was very hard because, when you couldn't pass in English, there was no way you were ever going to get to university. So I decided farming was going to be it.
Farming was your university?
Yes, that was my university. And when I came here, I didn't know nothing about I learnt with my father. We didn't know much about dairy farming, but we learnt, and we think we're one of the best in the country now.
What were some of the hard learning curves dairying in the early days?
I think the hardest part was milking was easy. You chase the cows in and just milk them. That was done easily. The hardest part was feeding them. You had to feed them properly to get the best milk, and because our farm didn't have a lot of water, so we had a lot of trouble growing feed, and we have to cart feed in and all that. So that was the hardest part. But milking's easy. It's the feeding of them that's very hard, and get the right mix.
So why was it hard growing?
Well, the farm we had wasn't really a good farm. It was used up by growing tomatoes. It's taken all the goodness out. So we would have to start, putting fertiliser out. We couldn't afford the fertiliser. So it was all difficult at them stage when you had no money.
Let's just talk about the tomato farming. At your biggest time, how many tomato plants did you have?
I can remember that very big. We had 70,000 plants in at one time. That was on different crops, but it was 70,000 planted.
So your father was a high achiever?
A very high achiever. He used to take a full load on the truck to the markets, which is of tomatoes, and, one of the biggest growers around. So he was really very big in tomato growing.
So what were you doing when that must have been a lot of work. Did he bring people in to pick the tomatoes?
Yeah, we had. We used to bring different people to come and pick. A lot of the local people would help work there, and I don't know how much money they got, but my brother and we didn't get nothing, and we used to work there. So, we didn't get no money, no pocket money, anything like that until we left school, and we used to then get 10 shillings a week.
So tell me about the tomato farming. When you're picking the tomatoes, how would that look? How many people would be working?
Well, there was picking was another one of the easiest part. It was packing it. So in the packing shed, there would be four or five people packing tomatoes. And I remember a long time ago when the army, they used to come and take all the tomatoes. They used to come in the army trucks. I can remember that as a kid. They used to come up there, and I thought it was a big thing. They had a lot of big trucks, and I was really excited because I love machinery. And they'd back in the shed and load all the tomatoes on. So that was how they sold the tomatoes, and the rest then would go to Sydney.
So your dad was growing tomatoes for the army?
Yes, he was.
And other vegetables?
Yes. He didn't want to grow, but they come and said, you've got to give it to tomatoes, and they would take first choice any tomatoes. So that's what happened.
What property was that on?
That was on the property at Bringelly, at Leppington, there, corner of Cowpasture Road and Bringelly Road. I don't know much. I can't remember a lot about the other properties.
But you were growing them for the army then during the war?
Yeah.
And you would have been very young?
Yeah.
And you remember the trucks coming in?
I remember the trucks coming in. Now, I can't even remember how old I was.
You would have been about five or six.
Yeah, but I can remember that very easily.
Yes. So let's just get back to the packing. How were they packed?
They actually, not like today, they're going loose. You actually have to pack them in long pear boxes, and you'd have to saw them in half. You buy them second hand and saw them in half. And pack them in. Then I remember I used to help nail the lids down. So it was totally different what it was today. You really had to pack and sort, and it was done very different what it is today.
Do you remember what type of tomatoes you grew?
China and Gros Lissy. I remember that. And I remember the farm was good because it was very high. We never used to get a lot of frost. But I remember sometimes when the frost was real bad, we used to have to light fires around the tomatoes to form smoke, and that would try and keep the frost away. The worst thing what we ever had there, I remember one big hailstorm come through and wiped the tomato crop out, and that was bad.
How old were you then?
Oh, I can't remember that, but I probably was about 8 or 9 or 10, something like that.
So tell me how your father, what that process would be like. It would be devastating.
It was devastating, you know. And I remember my mum crying and all that type of thing. But that was nothing. He just got on with it. That was one of the things. He cried for a few hours and then got on with work again. You got to keep going. So that's farming. You learn for the good times and the bad times.
So where were you? You were positioned high, so you're closer to the sun. Is that what you're saying?
It was high. It was, the altitude was high. And the high got there, didn't get the frost. So frost was always in the lower valleys.
So you didn't have to go to all that stuff with the...
Oh, we still covered in bags. Oh, yeah, didn't take a risk. Still did that. You know, you had to keep tomatoes warm. So we used to have to every morning go and uncover the tomatoes. My brother and me would do that before school. That was one of the things you did.
How long did that take you to do that?
Oh, I can't remember. It would take an hour at least, you know.
How were you physically over that period?
I was very strong. I was very strong when I left school, and I was a very strong young man, very strong.
Okay. Just going to have a break for a minute.
Okay.
Just got to get my bearings.
Yes, no trouble.
How are you going?
Good, no worries.
You're just like a steam engine, isn't that good?
Is it?
Yeah, no, you're doing really well.
Okay, I just see you rang me now.
Hey, you see who rang you? Yeah. So we'll do about another 15
it's very easy to talk
minutes.
The truth.
Well, that's it.
Very easy. Just talk the truth. That's don't it. Talk stories, otherwise you get confused.
No. We don't want stories.
Tell it as it is.
We don't want the stories. We want the truth. That was good. I like that bit about the fires. I haven't heard that yet, that you lit fires around them. That's great.
You could talk to me about how do we get some feed in. I used to go to the market.
Oh,
so
yeah, let's do that, yeah. And okay. I'll talk about the tomato steaks too. Did you cut them, the wattles, or what did you do?
No, my father did. I was too young. They used to go out in the paddock and cut them. But I never did that.
Okay, all right, we'll go to the dip. That's a good idea.
You mentioned you had to bring a lot of food in.
Yes.
To the dairy to feed the cows. Where did you get who provided you with this?
So one of the big things was we used to go to the city markets down at where was the city markets down in city?
Paddy's.
Yeah, down with the Paddy's market. What do they call it down there? I just forget. Anyway, no matter when, I used to go down every day. Leave here at 4:30 in the morning, drive the truck down, and used to collect all the cauliflower leaves. And I used to fork them on the truck and bring them back home and fork it out there. Now, when I went down there, I was only 16. I had no license. I used to drive a truck every day into Sydney without a license. And in them days, you'd stop at Broadway's with a full load, and the police was directing traffic. It says, looks like you've been working hard. I said, yes, and I was got to know him, and he knew me, and I didn't have a license. He's never asked me for one. But I went there every day and used to and really put on some big loads, and I could show you photos of some big loads we put on and bring it home and feed the cows. And that's how we started, just doing the best we could, you know, to feed it, because we had no money to buy anything else. We had to go there because we got them for nothing. But we used to have to work hard to fork them on the truck.
So who supplied you with, what did it look like at the city markets? You'd arrive? Tell me what you would
do. Now, when you arrived there, you parked the truck. And when they were selling the cauliflowers, they used to drop all the leaves off on the side of their trucks. And we used to go in between the trucks and load them on the truck and help the market keep it clean. So it was a hard job, but it was well rewarding because we used to get the food for nothing. Only to drive in and drive out.
And who did you learn? Who gave you that tip?
Oh, I think my father said he heard about we could get all these cauliflower leaves down there. And we kind of felt he used to feed his cows when he used to grow cauliflowers and cabbage leaves. So we said, this is a good idea. Why don't we feed the cows? And we did. So it was very rewarding for us.
So how long did you do that for?
I did that for very many years until we bought out here. Then when we bought out here, this is a larger farm. We start growing our own food, and then we were right.
So did you have silos?
Not on the old farm, no silos. We couldn't afford any of that.
Okay. So what about silage? Did you bury it or?
No, we never buried any silage down there.
The cauliflower?
Just the cauliflowers.
Did you mix anything else?
No, just used to get on the go around the paddock and throw it out, and the cows would follow us around and eat it all up. So it was not a problem. It was good. It was pretty hard when it was wet sometimes. You couldn't get around the paddocks, but we'd manage.
So let's talk about, I think it's just started right, Leppington. So here, you've been here for how long?
Been here, I think, just about 45, 50 years. And when we first come here, we used to, it was a very run-down farm, and my wife and me used to come up here. I'd have her on the tractor, and she would, I'd hook a chain around some stumps and pull the stumps out with the tractor and try to slowly clear the place up. And we ploughed it up and start working this while we're building the dairy. So then we built the dairy here, we moved from Lepping to here and then sold that farm.
When you'd load the cabbage leaves, you'd load with
pitchforks.
Pitchforks.
All with pitchforks. And we'd throw it right up and we'd get up in the truck and jump down on it to see if we can get more on. It was a lot of hard work. But like I said, it was good.
So how tall are you?
6'3".
So you were 6'3"?
Yeah.
And you were fit?
I was fit. Very, very skinny and very fit. In the middle of winter, I was loading leaves down there with a singlet and shorts. And a cowboy hat. We were called the cowboys because we all always wore black hats, and we were called the cowboys. So in the middle of winter, and they couldn't believe it. I was sweating in the middle of winter with singlet and shorts, and it was freezing cold.
Where did you get that strength from? To not so much the physical strength, but the mental strength.
From my parents. There's no question Mum was a big driver, Father was a big driver, and I think I had the will. I had the will, I wanted to do it. I wanted to show my parents how proud they are of me.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's a true story.
Let's talk about how you are as a father.
As a farmer, As a father.
So you've carried that on?
I've carried that on. I'm a very hard father, and no difference in my father, and I probably a bit harder on my two boys because I drive them hard, but that's what I know, and they've accepted most of it, some not, but, you know, basically they've been just as good as I am. Okay, it's very simple what I want from my family's future, that they take notice of what my brother and and myself have done, working together. I want them to stay together for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And that's the only thing I want in life, but that's good. And to be healthy, naturally.
And who are some of your, like, you've got all these pictures on the wall here. So you've been very active in the community. What are some of your biggest community sort of passions?
I think today the Rotary Club is. They give a lot to the community. I'm a charter member of Narellan Rotary. There's only two of us left. I've been there now. We've got the 20th year coming up. So I think that's good working with the community. In other words, when you're successful, you should always give back. And that's what our family's doing now. Brother and me, we always try to give back to the community. Because his work is never done. He loves a good drink of wine, only if it's nice and fine. His veggie garden makes him proud. It could almost feed a hungry crowd. Granddad likes playing cards, so trying to beat him proves quite hard. My granddad likes his Donald Duck, which must give him lots of luck. He takes his grandkids to the movies and treats us with yummy smoothies. Ice cream makes granddad a big kid. He loves it even when he's forbid. We love our granddad very much. It fills up with his special touch. That was my granddaughter. She read that on my day. Very nice, okay?
And what's her name?
Laura, all right? She's 11 year old when she did this. So it was very nice. She wrote it out there and she read it out on my 70th birthday. So that's some of the good things. Oh, that's a photo of the family and the grandkids.
So just looking at your boys again, can you just tell me again about the birth of when you found out you were having twin boys?
I thought that when we didn't know. Could have been twin girls, could have been one of each, which would have been nice too. But I was praying for boys, and God was good to me. It was so exciting, I couldn't believe it. You know, it was after waiting for so many years, because we couldn't have kids, then to have twins, it was just enormous. And that was it.
And where were you working again when your wife...
Out in the paddock, out here, up here in the farm here, picking up bales of hay. You know, and my mother come across, because there was no mobile phones, so I rang my mother, she was at home, and she come across the paddy running and pretty excited too, and telling me, you know, that she's had twins, you know, so I went in.
So you, it's quite a way to get into the hospital.
It was at Crown Street in Sydney, it was a way, but I got there, pretty excited, I was driving probably too fast, but doesn't matter.
So did you help in the race? How did you organise raising the kids? If you're both working, you're both teamwork?
I never changed a nappy. I didn't have time. You know, and my wife used to work and look after the kids, and she managed. We got by, and yes, it was tough. It was tough, but that's life. You know, sometimes you had to do what you had to do, you know. I don't regret it. But and we grew up very happy, still together 50 years, so things must be all right.
So were they out in the farm with you, the boys, when they were little?
Yes, they were. They used to, my wife used to drive the hay truck around, and the twins used to be down in the gunnel down there where the passenger seat were there. She used to put them there, and she used to drive the truck, and they would she'd look after them as she was working. She'd come up the dairy. The kids would be in the bassinet in the milk room, and she'd be milking, going in there, checking up all the time. So it worked. It worked.
Because that was the reality, wasn't it?
That
you
was.
Had, you had to bring your kids where you were.
Exactly right, you know. So it was all right, you know. Then as they grew up, they used to, you know, at 4 years old, they used to be running around a calf shed and try and help mum feed the calves. And then they used to feed the calves themselves. So it was good. All the grandkids did that. And then my brother's kids did that.
How do you feel about this property?
I love it. You know, I was always born to be a farmer, and we just bought a lot of land, and we loved the land. I loved the work on the land. That's why it was nothing to work 15, 16 hours, 18 hours a day on a tractor ploughing, because it was just enjoyable. It was good.
Lucky you liked it.
Yeah, but you have to like it.
So you moved from tomatoes growing.
Yes.
To dairying.
That's right. You know,
what was that decision around that time?
Well, we didn't like tomato growing. We were more or less wanted to be around animals, and that was it. It was a very easy decision. So we just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and we're still doing that today. We can't seem to stop.
So can you talk about when you moved again? Sorry, I just missed some of it on the recording. When you moved from, you started at Cobbity.
No, we started at Leppington.
Sorry, when you were at Cobbity, moved to Cobbity.
No, we didn't move. We bought a property at Cobbity, and we used to grow our feed there and cart it back to Leppington. And then we had a small dairy there too. But we used to grow feed there and move it back to Leppington to feed the cows.
Do you know who you bought the property from?
No.
And then you bought more land further out. How much land did
No,
you
then have? We bought here. Then we bought a property at Bathurst. We bought 1,500 acres of Bathurst. Used to grow our lucerne there and grow our heifers out there. Then that place got too small, so then we bought a property at West Wylong. And then after that, we bought another property at Tranga. They're all 25,000 acre properties.
And you got... So as you're learning about the farming business and securing more land to make it more efficient... And growing your lucerne.
Yes.
And is that when you did your trips to America?
No, we did the trips to America just to try and get new ideas what other farmers are doing over there. And, you know, like feeding different products. So that's when we started, after a trip to America, start feeding the cows by computer, where the agronomists were put in the feed cost and all that and worked out what the cows should be eating.
Yeah. So that was useful, that?
That was useful, yeah.
And just an overview of here, how the dairy size has changed.
Well, the dairy kind of changed in the sense that we just got kept getting bigger, milking more cows and more cows. The dairy got small, too small, built another dairy. We kept adding more cows, and that got too small until we had to build the one we got today.
And you built the two dams?
Yes.
On arrival?
First one was on arrival, one come later.
And tell me about how the water supply of the dams, how they...
Well, they water supply, once they're full, the dams, yeah, we can irrigate all our country here for 5 years without any rain.
How do you fill the dams?
That's just natural. Come from rain.
So that drought did impact you, no doubt.
That drought went longer than what normally it does, and we did run out of water. So it was tough then. Okay? Yep.